Welcome to the Football Podcast. This is your host, Mr. Number 9.
And this is the Fool.
Hello, everyone. We are back for another Premiership season, slightly later than when the season would start. We promise we will do some sort of preview. It may be in blog form rather than in podcast form.
Yeah.
But yes, we decided we needed to get one done. Unfortunately, domestic... For once, it wasn't laziness. It was domestic issues that caused...
Actual valid reasons
for missing out. Like, we had everything planned out, like, days to go in and do podcasts.
I know, it's amazing. We're being organized, and then, domestic life just is like, nope, none of that for you.
But it's a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Now, it's been a wonderful start to the season. Right off the bat, we've been chatting about this with the Fool here for the last 5 minutes. How ominous are Manchester City? Not ominous enough? Just the right amount of ominous, or too ominous?
I think probably just the right amount of ominous. I mean, they're looking good. They're looking more than good, really. But I feel like this is just the year that the champions curse has just gone away in the Premiership.
Probably.
Like, I don't know how long it's been since a champions actually played well at the beginning.
The last team to retain a champion, to retain a championship, was Manchester United in 2011, I believe. Something like that. Actually, no, it's not 2011. It was like 2011 is when they retained the championship, because 2012 is when City won in that last minute with QPR.
Yeah.
So
that's right. And then,
And since then, nobody's... And it's not that nobody has... the champion has failed to retain. That happens. But they've all played terribly this year.
That's more of the thing. Like, they haven't even come second or third. I think third might be the best.
You could say that this hoodoo started with... Basically, apart from Manchester City, who's consistently finished in the top four after winning the championship. Manchester United, after Sir Alex Ferguson's last season, finished sixth and missed out on Champions League football. Leicester City didn't finish in the top four. Chelsea didn't finish in the top four. This is the final one. This year, we come back to Manchester City, who've won their third Premiership this decade. And now, look, odds-on favourites to retain it. This is even more impressive when you take into account that Manchester City had the most number of players at the World Cup.
Yeah.
So, and they've had a decent amount of players playing in the last week of the World Cup for both Belgium, England, and France. Off the top of my head, I cannot think of a Croatian player who played for any of those top English clubs apart from Matic at United. But I could be wrong.
Kovacic over the off season, but and he played in the final. So
yeah, so they've had arguably just as tough, if not a tougher road than anyone else. Yes, he's got a very settled squad. He bought a very good player in Riyad Mahrez in the top six. And it's a good move. It takes a good player away from a team that could be tricky for them to play against season progresses. And Leicester City are one of those people who are challenging to be the best of the rest, shall we say. And also a player who's got really good record in the Premiership and gives them that extra spark at the end, like just that competition for places. And David Villa, fantastic player that he is, probably one of the best players in the last decade to play in the Premiership. Though he never seems to be in the conversation, just quietly gets the job done. And he's a forward even, very Paul Scholes-esque. Paul Scholes, probably because he was English, got a bit more media attention, and especially Man United fans always appreciated him. Though I don't think the rest of even though he has a very good record for England, I don't think the English fans ever really quite warmed to him. Probably because he's a United player. But yeah, David Silva, obviously he's well regarded in his home country of Spain. Double European Championship and a World Cup winner, so there's good reasons to love him if you're a La Roya fan. And the And at City, I'm sure the fans, City fans, love him to death.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Sing his praises, but he just seems to never get enough, a lot of credit outside of City. But he's a super consistent, fantastic performer. This is the thing. They've got so many other good performers, and it gives him that extra bit of tactical depth, I want to say, that variability, which, like, we saw it demonstrated against Chelsea, where Pep just swapped around his players and changed the tactics in the middle of the game last season. Having another player like Mahrez in the squad means they can do that. Probably the kind of player he wanted to get was someone to be a backup for Fernandinho.
That's definitely what they've been looking for.
But they're not panic buying.
No.
For anyone. And they've got good players, I'm sure, coming up to the academy. And I'm sure Pep is more than happy to give them a chance while they're doing so well.
Yeah.
And while the form is good, that's when you can try and blood the new players and let them have a go.
Yeah. Because I think City was aiming at Fernandinho,
who ended up going to Chelsea.
And that was their replacement there in the middle. Say, chose Chelsea, which, and he's been doing good for us.
Yep.
But you say, I don't think Pep's panicking about it. It's not like he's has to find someone this season.
I think so. And like I said, he's probably got a few people in the youth team he's thinking about that might... that he likes the look of. And that's the other thing. City have arguably the best youth system, so...
Yeah.
Should tomorrow the Qatar go bankrupt and they have no more money coming through, they still have a production line of good players to pick from.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be fine.
They'll be fine. That being said, they look amazingly good. A lot of people are picking Liverpool to be their greatest challenger, and I picked them too before the... season started. My pick was that Manchester United would finish outside the top four because we all know it's a third year for Mourinho.
Yeah.
And it really depends on who they get in the interim. I had Chelsea in my top four. I couldn't pick between Chelsea and Spurs whether they'd be finishing third or fourth.
Yeah.
And I picked Liverpool to be second. But looking at the beginning of the season, yes, Liverpool have impressed the way we expect Liverpool to impress. But I've been pretty impressed with Chelsea as well.
Definitely.
Good new coach, couple of new players in the right positions. And he's still learning about his squad and learning what to do with them.
And they're still learning a bit how he works. There's new players coming in, so they've got to learn how to fit in. We've gone from a back three with wing-backs to back to the back four.
Yep.
So that's changing around. So, like, Alonso's got to play differently. Aspilicueta's got to play differently. David Luiz has come back into central defence.
Mm-hmm.
Things are sort of all getting shook up. Kante's playing a bit more further forward than he was.
Yeah.
And despite that, we've had two good wins.
Scored 6 goals. Sarri knew there was a lot of stuff about the team that wasn't broken. There was just a chemistry issue. So he's the new chemistry, so he just needs to figure out how to make it fit. And I think, let's be honest, they didn't become bad players overnight.
No.
So they're very, very well capable of doing what Sarri wants them to do, I think. And
definitely.
Chelsea, I think, are a very, very strong team. I mean, I don't think they're quite ready to beat Manchester City for the title, but I think them and Liverpool, it'll be a three-horse race between the three of them for top three.
I imagine it's going to be a little bit like our first year of Mourinho version 2.0 with big horse, little horse.
Yeah.
I get the sort of same feelings that we'll be there in the question, but I don't know if we're going to be quite as dominant as the other two.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll slip Liverpool up as well again, just to make it funny.
The only reason why I don't think Spurs will compete is because they didn't reinforce their squad in the off-season. I don't know if nobody knows what Daniel Levy's thinking, probably. But if he's going to buy any new players in the off-season, in the January window, I know United very, very rarely want to buy them unless they happen to be a really good deal, like when they got Evra and Vidic in that same window. And both of them took half a season to get into it, and then obviously they became legends. But United might end up doing something like that, but it really depends on who's the manager in January. that being said, there are there are rumors that there's going to be a technical director and all these other things, and those are good long-term structures. I think Woodward is really, really good at earning money. He's a very good negotiator, but he needs somebody to explain the football bits to him. He needs somebody to go, yeah, this is the guy you want, this is what he's worth, this is exactly the thing, and Woodward needs to follow that. And I don't think, because I think there is a personality issue, like Mourinho obviously can tell him to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you don't get along with the guy and there seems to be some problems there, that's going to make that relationship very difficult to function, like that professional relationship.
Yeah. The issue is that Mourinho likes just to do what Mourinho wants to do. He doesn't want to have to go get... He wants a player and he wants to just be able to bid for the player and get him. He doesn't want to have to go and get it signed off by someone or have someone say, no, you can't go after that guy, you have to go after this guy, or control the purse strings in any way. He wants to just be like, I've got this thing missing. I need a player like this. I like that player. He fits what I want. I want him.
Yeah,
and then he just wants to go for him. And when you give him that freedom, he doesn't. Yeah. But
to be fair, he said he gave them a list of players to pick from.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe that. That seems logical, because no manager would go pick this guy and expect him to get it. Nobody has No club has that much financial strength that they can just outbid everyone.
Oh, no, definitely. It would have been a list, and it would have been prioritized why he would have very good reasons for it.
I feel like there was a sense in United that they weren't sure whether these players were worth the value that Mourinho clearly felt they were worth. That being said, this is supposed to be a negotiation. You have a bit of a to and fro. You work it out.
But this is also Mourinho.
And now if you introduce a technical director into that mix, I can only see it getting more problematic in the long run, because there's a third person in that mix who you can disagree with. And the technical director person's got to be somebody who actually knows his stuff as well. Somebody who is who probably rates himself as a, you know, and all that other stuff. So I
could see it working if it's the, I don't know who it could be, but if it's the right sort of person who could balance Mourinho's ego.
Yeah.
Whilst also, you know...
So what you're saying is, the Man United manager needs a manager to manage him.
Yes, because it's Mourinho. Mourinho needs someone to manage him. Needs someone that he can talk to and who will agree with him when he's right, and that be able to say, you're wrong for these reasons when he's wrong. And
this is the key difference, I think, between Pep and Mourinho, because Pep likes the challenge of going, okay, this is what I have to work with. I'm going to ask for stuff.
Yeah.
If I get about 60% of what I'm asking for, that's good enough. I back myself to do good enough with that. And these players, and there'll be players in the squad where you just go, look, I can just sell this guy and get him out. That said, and he's got a guy in his structure with Tiki Bergistan, who's like, you know, who went through youth football in Barcelona with him and was his technical director at Barcelona.
Yeah, yeah.
So clearly they're not going to disagree too much. And Bergistan's been there for 5 years before Pep went, so he's got this long-term plan, which obviously Pep buys into, goes, oh yeah, this is how we see your team developing, and how I want to lead it. So it's the sort of thing where, you know, like, there's a solid infrastructure, you know, the background work is working well, so the team is on draw. Like, obviously, I don't think Man United are going to be relegated or finish under 8 or 9. That's sort of unlikely, but I think 5th, 6th is very possible. Mourinho is going to have to pull off another, if he's there, I think he's going to have to pull off either another Europa League win to qualify for the Champions League, or hope that he wins the Champions League himself. Obviously, if he wins the Champions League, everything's for him. We don't care about league positions anyway. But
if you win the Champions League, who cares about league positions? Who ever did that? Yes, a lot depends on what he actually does.
Hey, don't tell me you didn't think the same thing when Chelsea won the Champions League.
I thought exactly the same thing when we won the Champions League. I mean, really. As you say, it's what matters.
Exactly. That being said, the Champions League, I think, for the first time in a long time, is more open than ever, because Zidane is gone from Real, and so is Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
The Juve have Cristiano Ronaldo now, and they have been not bad in the Champions League stakes for the last few years.
Yeah, they've been there.
And if Cristiano Ronaldo manages to win a Champions League with Juve, he could very legitimately ask them to change that trophy to his name, because he's won it at three different clubs in three different leagues.
Yeah.
Especially if he scores in a final again.
Yeah, that'd be crazy if that happens.
He's already by far, he is already the highest scorer in the Champions League. Not that far behind is Lionel Messi, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But that said, I wouldn't mind if they changed the name of that the Champions League trophy into the Cristiano Ronaldo Lionel Messi trophy. I think even Cristiano Ronaldo would be happy with that. Because I think deep down, both of them, for rivals, they don't actually have any animosity between the two of them, personality-wise. Because he literally says, like, I don't know him. And, he acknowledges that rivalry drives them to do really good things. And I'm sure it slightly must jar Cristiano that his son's favorite player is Lionel Messi. And he's obsessed with him. But it's also really cute. And it's difficult for him to be annoyed and angry with Messi. When his son's like, oh my god, he's the greatest player ever.
Oh, that must be the most hilarious conversations ever.
Because it's one of those things where, because he met Cristiano Jr. met Messi in one of the Ballon d'Ors, and Messi gave him a little peck on the cheek and and hugged him, and he was like pretty much spellbound. But the second year he met him, he was just like talking all the time with Messi's son, all about how his dad is the coolest guy.
Oh yeah, that's awesome.
So it's the sort of thing where I could see them both retiring and becoming like actually good friends. They're very similar in that respect. They're both very driven and want to be good players.
I don't think they've ever had any great on-field fight or anything. No. Like, they haven't had great anger spark-ups or anything at each other whenever they played each other. Like,
I think the most they've done is maybe, if you think that GOAT reference that Cristiano did in the World Cup was basically just to rile. But even that is like, it's a friendly gesture. It's a friendly rivalry. It's not even like...
There's no animosity in there. There's no anger or hatred or anything like that. There's no dark side. It's all just good-natured ribbing of making a bit of fun about stuff.
Yeah. See, Australian cricket team, that is how you sledge, by the way. That's the line. You talk about, by the way.
Need to know a line? There's a line.
There's the line. But that is a topic for another time altogether. But Champions League is definitely very open. And like Barcelona are obviously one of those usual suspects that are always there. Bayern have a new coach. And Lewandowski has agreed to stay. So that's always going to be good news for them. Though they have, for the first time in a while, they've got a bit of a challenge in Dortmund and Leipzig, both doing really well in the off-season. In Italy, we've got Juve, we've got Carlo Ancelotti at Napoli. He's got a point to prove. He'll want to show off what he's made of. And PSG, as always, with new coach Thomas Tuchel, who once again got unceremoniously dumped from Dortmund because he had issues with managing the stars and the staff. He's basically he's got all of Klopp's brilliance, maybe even more, but he's got a lot of he doesn't have Klopp's affability where he seems to just get along with everyone. Even Jose Mourinho probably likes Klopp. I think in his first ever game between the two of them in the Champions League, he mocked Klopp for wearing a tracksuit, or teased him really for wearing a tracksuit instead of being suited up because it was a Champions League game. For example, I do think Mourinho had, while he might not openly say it, but he probably really disliked Arsene Wenger, and he really probably dislikes Pep Guardiola, but I don't think he dislikes, I think he probably has a similar relationship with Klopp that he did with Alex Ferguson, where they would probably be friends reasonably off the field.
They're not nice on the field or in the press conference, but you get the feeling that once that's all over and done with, they'll go down having a beer at the pub. With Arsene Wenger, Mourinho was never having a beer at Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
Like, that just wasn't never going to happen.
Yeah. And with Pep, it might be more of a professional rivalry, yeah. which just disallows him to... Because he's just so competitive, Mourinho.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
It may not personally... Like, I think he also probably personally disliked Manuel Pellegrini, who yeah. he had more than a few clashes with
yeah, yeah, exactly.
in both Spain and England.
Yeah.
But in a way, his relationship with Pep is probably like Arsene Wenger's relationship with Alex Ferguson, where they had that rivalry. But
yeah.
clearly there's enough respect that because Alex Ferguson wrote the foreword in Arsene Wenger's autobiography.
Yeah, exactly.
So clearly there is a lot of mutual respect for the two of them there.
Yeah, yeah.
That being said, speaking of Alex Ferguson, good news for United fans. It looks like he's recovered from his surgery.
Oh, that's good.
Doing well. He's planning to go to games, so...
Oh, that's very good.
But, yeah, you know, for his own recovery's sake, I hope after Mourinho leaves.
Well, yeah, probably.
I mean, part of me goes, you've just had a surgery, Sir Alex. I don't want to force, but, you know, Mourinho leaves so that we're forced to take Sir Alex back and run the team.
Don't think that'll happen, but I can see how you might want that.
Heck, at this stage, I would take Arsene Wenger to run United. But that being said, just to click on, obviously, I'm not happy with our preseason or I'm not unhappy. I do like Fred. I think he's a very good player, and I think he's the right sort of player for United to have bought. But and we bought a right back in Dalot, but he's injured, so. It's almost like not buying someone for the first few weeks. So we very desperately needed another center back. But that being said, I can't disagree with Ed Woodward where he's going, there's no point in buying another center back who's probably only just as good as someone like Phil Jones or Eric or Chris Smalling, because we've already got a Chris Smalling and Phil Jones. And
yeah, exactly.
We need somebody who's slightly better than them, who can maybe inspire those players to do better and, like, you know, motivate themselves. You want that level of player to come in and take over the defense. You want, like, or if you're going to buy someone who's similarly as good as them, you don't want it to be like a 50, 60 million player. You want it to be like maybe a 10 to 20 million player.
Yeah, yeah,
like
exactly.
Lichtensteiner was for Arsenal. That was a good deal made by Arsenal. That being said, Arsenal, the club that have lost two games, but I kind of see what they're doing, and
they had a very hard start to the season.
They have had a hard start to the season, but I kind of dig the style that they're trying to play, and I have to say I do like that Unai Emery is sticking to his guns. He's making his players stick to the because I can see the players are while they're teething into it. Arsenal will play really well if they gel into Unai Emery's style, and it could be very similar to Conte's first season at Chelsea, where it took him a while to get the team rolling and get them into it. But once they got used to his style and understood his tactics, and I think the team are bought into it.
Yeah.
Though I think it's a bit harsh to ask Peter Cech to become a centre back when he's been a goalkeeper all his life. That's probably the only one where I'm a bit questioning about his. But even then, that's like a slight twist on his tactics where he needs to be a bit more understanding. Chinacek is still a very, very good goalkeeper. His distribution skills leave a lot more to be desired for, which is why probably Conte was happy to let him go to Arsenal.
Well, that was more of a power play by Courtois than anything.
Yeah.
But that was definitely a Courtois. I want to go to Real. I'm in Madrid now. Sell me, or if you want me to come back, I have to start. And there was no point keeping Peter Cech around if Courtois was going to be your starting goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And if the only way to keep Courtois was to have him as a starting goalkeeper, then there was only one.
To be fair, Courtois is a magnificent goalkeeper.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was probably not a bad decision. And
I mean, I'm a bit upset with it, just because I'm sort of at the time, it's like, yeah, it's okay, Courtois is pretty good, it's going to be fine. But then Courtois isn't really, with the saga of this last transfer window in the summer after the World Cup and his move to Real just being him saying, I'm moving to Real, whatever's, and then sort of not even showing up for pre-season or anything. That was not what you'd call heartwarming.
Yeah, I mean, that is what we get from the media, but it's one of those things where, like, there's a story about Paul Ince. Like, one of the reasons why he's always hated at West Ham is while he was still a West Ham player, he got photographed with a picture of him wearing a West Ham shirt, wearing a Man United shirt, and he moved to Man United that summer. And West Ham fans were rightfully upset about that. But when he talked to the journalist who took that photo, his thing was that the agreement with Paul Ince was he's going on holiday, there are negotiations with United, he's going to go to United, he's giving them a sneak peek, he's take a photo, but until this, when the signing gets thing, that's when you publish it. That was the agreed thing.
Yeah.
And it went out, it got leaked, and, you know, ruined his reputation. And so I'm a bit, like, I could be, I get the feeling that there was a bit of an agreement, because Chelsea very quickly managed to get a replacement for him. And clearly they knew this was coming, and Courtois probably told them before the season, like, look, I want to move to Madrid.
He's been very open about it for a while. He's very open to the fact that he likes Madrid, Real Madrid, and he wanted to play for Real Madrid at some point. And that boyhood dream was to play for Real Madrid and stuff like that. And his wife is from Spain and lives in Madrid. You know,
and they, his family lived there. So
his family lived there. I mean,
so in all sense, it does make sense.
It was just sort of the way, because he sort of just got more and more bullish about it. And yes, Chelsea found a replacement quickly, but that was by just spending ridiculous amounts of money for a good keeper. Like, keeper's good. Whether he's worth £70 million, that's a different story.
Well, it's the money they spent on Courtois.
Yeah, exactly.
They got for Courtois, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was basically a direct swap. And it was the sort of thing that, you know, it's what happens when you have to. It shows that it was a rush to replace Courtois.
Yeah.
It wasn't a planned thing, because they probably could have found a keeper of similar stature that they could have got for cheaper, and therefore made money. And
they didn't lose out money, and it was a reasonable amount of overall.
It's hard, because it's not a bad deal. Both of them aren't bad deals, right? Fine, if that's had to happen, that was the best way that could have happened, was like that. Yeah. If that was the way it was going to happen, but it was just more that it was obviously not fully planned. Like, it wasn't Chelsea's plans heading into the summer to sell Courtois and buy a new keeper. That was Courtois' decision 2 weeks before the start of the season. So, you know, the last week was a bit of a scramble, just to be like, okay, who can we get? Oh, $70 million for keeper? Yeah, sure. That like for like replacement, and that's what we're getting. Fine. $0 difference, got a good keeper, it'll be fine. But yeah, if it had been planned, it would have probably worked out slightly better.
Probably. But